A5. Number 6B.
So, the Bible, with its complete different language than the language of the textbook, cultures us in reading the tones through other words. And that's a very good culture. And then there is another way of culturing our synonymous terms and the tonality of it, and that is what we had done over the last year or so, namely to read the textbook tone-wise. To read the textbook in a different way than when we study the seven synonymous term, going only through the references where in a reference the term mind or spirit or so appears, but where we begin to read a whole chapter chronologically from the first sentence to the last sentence and listening to the subject of that chapter, seeing how that chapter is stating at the beginning the proposition of the chapter, how then that proposition is evolved step by step until at the end it reaches its climax. And therefore, because it is not a human story but a divine story, Mrs. Eddy will build up that story in the order of the capitalized term, either in the order of the seven synonymous term, or in the order of the four sides of the city, or in the order of the four levels. She can, according to the subject, she can change that naturally. So that one begins to read the textbook no more by looking where a synonymous term appears, but the subject matter itself, the way she reasons out the proposition of the chapter and shows how through step by step we arrive at the final conclusion or climax. This is all tonality. This cannot be seen through the printed word. It's only what the printed word conveys as a subject is being caught, so to say, by our consciousness, if there is tonality within our consciousness. This answers the great question why, after 100 years of Christian Science textbook, and in a movement that wherein 1 million people perhaps read every day that textbook, and most of the people read it and study it all their lives, every day, why they could never see up to now the structure of that textbook, the inner meaning, the coherent meaning of that story. All they are still reading are single sentences and understanding single sentences, or perhaps a whole paragraph, but not the wonderful interrelationship that exists, the wonderful divine logic that leads thought from page to page, from chapter to chapter. Because only when we have the tonality of the capitalized terms can we read it that way. So knowing how to read English to be an alphabet and having had lessons at school how to read doesn't mean that we can read the text. We can't, that's not the same thing. We can read words, but to read the text needs something very different. It needs that that language of spirit. See, that language of spirit is necessary, that is coined by the seven synonymous term. That language of spirit alone can read that which is printed in English, in the English language, and in this way yield its treasure. So we can culture our thought through the textbook then in this way, that we go through a chapter and see how mind now is expressed over perhaps 10 pages in a chapter, always bringing up the tone of mind and the various aspects of mind, and then suddenly you will see from one paragraph to the next that you will change the tonality and take in the whole subject of spirit and see how she deals with the whole subject of spirit. And then suddenly you have a break and she begins with soul, for instance, and so on. And so if we read the textbook in that way, it cultures our tonality very, very much, extremely, and very scientifically and precisely, because the language of the textbook is naturally more precise than that one of the Bible. Yes, that's about tonality. Now, we can take an example. You have brought with you the compendium on mind. And so, let's take the compendium mind, page 93. Yes. And so, what I will do now, just to state the subject rightly, what I want to do now is say, if you are at home, many of you are isolated somewhere where they cannot join a group or a study group or have not much exchange of ideas and have to work all by himself or herself, it may be a help to know how you could proceed. Say, in the compendiums, but you could also take, naturally, Peggy's fundamental book, you have now the concept building, because in it we have stated which ideas of mind are characterizing mind. So actually you have already the result of our research work, and what you could do now is to build a list for yourself. For instance, you could build a list in this way, that you see on page 93, there is a subtitle called Creator. These subtitles that are in the middle of the line, in capitalized terms, are usually main ideas characterizing the synonymous term. So you could make a list by writing down, say, Creator, and then you see within the text of Creator you have various terms that are put in italics. In italics. Like on that very first Creator creates, makes, begets, produces. Can you see? They are in italics. We, at that time, we put them into italics there because we felt there are, so to say, secondary values. Not that they are not so important, but meaning that they actually express more or less the same as the main idea, Creator. If I say Creator, or if I say creates, or if I say makes, I say more or less the same tone. You can already begin some kind of tonality of it. So that if you make a list and, for instance, put down on the left-hand side the tone, then you can, those terms that are in italics, you can indent, for instance, so that afterwards you have on the left-hand side really the main values. Yes. All right. So you can make for yourself that list, you see. So the second one you would have, say, is on page 94, huh? Producer, huh? Just to first see the technique of it, then you have on page 95, you would have parent mind, and can you see what would be indented there? Just by looking over the text with your eyes without reading it, what would you have there? Yes? Father, mother, huh? Laws of harmony. Laws of heredity, huh? Yes. Yeah. Then the next one would be the big one, the primary one on page 96. Forms, so you put down forms, huh? As a verb, huh? That's quite interesting that sometimes the verb is under another synonymous term than the noun. Form as a noun is typically truth, huh? Whereas the forms, the verb, is typically mind. Yes. And then indented you would have what? Shapes, fashions, models, huh? All as verbs, huh? So that's the way you could establish really a first working list, and you could see you could do it just by going over it with your eyes, not to read the text, and establish, say, for mind first a list that would take in about 100-120 primary and secondary values. So you would have already quite a good list for mind to do that. Yes?
I noticed formations.
Yes?
Paragraph.
Yeah?
Formations would be a noun, wouldn't it?
But yes?
Is it generally identified in that way, or is that?
Well, formations of mind would be mind's formations, huh? Which means that which mind forms, huh? Yeah. When you study with the compendiums or with Peggy's books, but I can mostly speak about the compendium, remember, they have been written 25 years ago. 25 years ago. They are not written yesterday. And they were written at a time where where things were not too easy for us, to say the least. And where we were happy to bring out just what we could bring out, no matter if it was 100% right or only 95% right at that time. And therefore, don't think that when you go over this, just as here with formations, that this is now absolute, the last word. You have to use a little bit your spiritual sense and think that perhaps here and there something may not be 100% right. I think I told you that if I would write them today, perhaps I would have to change 3% to 3%. I don't think much more than that. So that what you have here is still very good, but don't make it a doctrinal statement or a doctrinal law. Just remain flexible to change and to adapt things when you feel they are not quite right, and don't think, well, in the compendium it's so and so, and therefore this is the last word. Somehow it doesn't go otherwise. We can't produce these booklets every second or third year because our thought goes forward, and therefore things which we have written 25 years ago may no more be 100% right. We can't afford the time nor the money nor anything to have a new edition. So take that into account. Be flexible. Don't think this is a doctrine that must be kept 100%, but little by little you will feel yourself where perhaps the weak points are. Also, when I said you can rely on these terms as being either in capitalized forms printed or then in italics, at that time we didn't think that this should help us to make a list. It was just the way we rewrote at that time. Today, naturally, when I would think that it should serve as a help for writing up a list, perhaps we would have been more careful in using the terms and italicizing the words as we have done now. Do you know what I want to say? Don't be too doctrinal about it. Be happy if you get 90% right. Yeah. All right. So, in this way, I have shown you how you could make the list. But then, when you have the list, comes the tonality building. And I want to go over with you this compendium Mind from page to page, where your eye just goes from the primary values to the italized values. You don't have to read what is written round about it, and I just try out of my very present moment's consciousness and attitude to show you how, say, I would sit back, as I have said, and having the list in front of me, how to ponder it. Instead that I ponder now silently, I will ponder audibly, and here and there show how the thought runs, how the logic runs, how the association of thought is in pondering such a list, so that if you have such a list at home, you can do it for yourself. All right. So I think loudly. Yes? But still you can interrupt me. Naturally, I have to do it slower, because when one speaks, one is slower than when one thinks. And also I have always to point out on which page we are, so that you can follow me very easy. So here I would sit back in a nice, quiet evening, where I shut out everything that doesn't belong into my room. The dog and the cats are out. They don't constantly bother me. And the telephone is cut off. So there is no disturbance. And I can really sit down and say, here is mind. And mind is one great aspect of the one being. What is mind? What does it mean that I'm thinking in the realm of mind? And so my eye falls on the first big idea, creator. So I think, all right, mind is the creator. I think mind is the creator. Mind. Not anything else is the creator. Matter cannot be the creator. People cannot be the creator. Sexuality cannot be the creator. The brain cannot be creative. Mind is the creator. And I begin to see, oh, there is only that mind that creates all. I come to the italicized terms. Mind creates. And because mind is the only mind and the all mind, it creates all. It constantly creates and creates and creates. And I get a terrific warm feeling that the divine mind is constantly creating and creating. Nothing else is in the course of creating something. No evil can be created. No trouble can be created. Nobody is around there to create trouble, to make trouble. It makes all. come to the other italicized term, makes all. Only mind makes. And I fill my mind by just adoring and seeing that only mind can make. Nothing else can make anything. So that really mind is the only maker. He begets. I think today if I would write the synonymous, the compendium again, I would leave that out, that begetting. It's not quite, it's right as a tone, but I remember that at that time we were very much interested in the second record of creation and covering the first 1,000-year period where you have in the record of creation always and so, Adam begets so, and begetting and begetting and begetting over a few pages, you have all the begetting in bringing out really in that first 1,000-year period that mind is the creator. So I would leave out that begetting today, but that time really it had its great impact on our consciousness, just to see that all that creates is only mind. And produces, that's another italicized term, is the producer and produces all. And so I fill my thought with that and I see, oh, that's jolly good. So I can see that only the divine being, God, mind, is really the creator, the producer, the maker of everything, the only creative ability ever going on. And therefore, you see what I do? I go usually to the negative. I can already incorporate the not. Just see, therefore, nothing else than mind can create. That's then the practicality of it, that it shows right into my present day life what cannot create. So that I feel there is no creative activity going on which does not stem from mind, or a creative ability going on that creates evil, that creates trouble, that creates unhappy situations, in discord, and so on. And I just fill my thought with that very simple thought that only the divine mind can create. Further down, you have the creative power that made all, and so I go over to the next page, 94, where we have the producer. We had already had it as an italicized term. You see, today I would make that a bit clearer, so you can have producer. It's the mind is the producer of all. So I begin to feel nothing is ever producing anything that is of lasting value, that is of real value, that is of eternal value, except that which mind creates and makes and produces. So that there is, within me I feel, all right, then there is no reason for building on any other productive element or productive cause. There is only one real producer, and that's the divine mind. And I know that mind, that I already know, that mind produces only that which is positive, produces only health, harmony, mortality, produces all action. And therefore you can see, if you take on page 95 on the top, those references that start with Science and Health 544, do you see it on line 4? You have in brackets sometimes just a help for your thought. If you go through there in the brackets, you see mind is the producer, mind produces all, man and the universe are the product, mind produces its own models of excellence. Mind produces in man health, harmony, and immortality. Mind produces all action. That's what she says in those references. And it is help right for your thought. Your eye just can go through over those short epitomes. And can you see how that fills and fills your consciousness? It says, okay, how wonderful that is, that only mind is the producer, therefore produces all the men and the universe, produces only models of excellence, nothing else. Only the maximum of good is produced. It produces, therefore, health and immortality and harmony. It produces all right actions, all positive actions. And so thought flows more and more in that vein. It goes on to the parent mind as the next primary value. And I begin to see, oh, fine. Mind, the divine mind, God, is really the parent mind. Oh, it's so wonderful. You see, once you get into the swing of it, you just see, oh, well, then mind was the producer. Mind wanted me. I'm never unwanted. Mind was that which desired me. Mind produced me. Mind had an idea for me. Mind had an identity for me. Mind has a mission for me. Mind is the producer, is my parent. I have no other parents but the parent mind. That mind that brings only forth models of excellence. Therefore, I'm created by mind. I'm wanted by mind. I'm not unwanted. Mind wanted me, made me. And so I feel, and I therefore, through the law of inheritance which I had before, I've inherited the one mind. So I have, the law of heredity comes just right afterwards as an italicized term. You get that wonderful law of heredity that I've inherited the one mind. Naturally, afterwards, when I know what mind is, that it is the intelligent mind, that it is the guiding and steering mind, I just feel I have inherited that one mind that knows all, that is all intelligent, all wise, and comprehends all, foresees all. That is the mind that I have inherited. God is that wonderful, that I have the mind of God. I have no other mind but that mind which is God. That's my parent mind. So my thought may flow on to the next page. That mind forms. And I see, oh, that's wonderful. It's mind, God, that forms, that creates. What does it form? I know that it forms and shapes. You have the italicized forms and shapes and fashions and models everything according to the highest model of excellence, because we have seen before that mind produces only models of excellence. So if mind molds me, if mind is my mind, therefore mind forms me and produces me and molds me and fashions me according to the model of excellence. Therefore mind has never formed anything that is not to the highest excellence. From mind always comes that constant flow of the forming of the best and the highest of harmony, health, immortality. And so I begin as a negative, that mind has never formed any deformation. All are the formations of mind, and has never in itself the power to form something that is deformed, that is decrepit. And so I begin to build up within me that sense that only mind really forms. You know, I've seen cases where children absolutely crippled from beginning. I've seen them forming and reforming their bones, becoming stronger and straighter and straighter until finally they could walk without any aid and do a job as good or better than a healthy person. It has taken time, years and years, but a steady reforming by the divine mind. So that mortal mind's formations are not the formations of divine mind and are not under the slavery, under the curse of divine mind, of mortal mind. The divine mind forms, and the formations of the divine mind are always right and healthy and good. And we jolly well just have to stick to that wonderful truth.